This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm here with Anna Rogue, and I would like to welcome you to this discussion on SaaS Scale.
Thank you, Armon. I'm very excited to be here.
And could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and about the company that you founded so we can learn, about your background and then go from there?
Absolutely. My name is Anurag Goyal. I am the founder and CEO of Render. Render, please check out render.com. That's our website. Render is a modern cloud provider that focuses on building really high-level constructs for application engineers to run their applications, full-stack applications in the cloud. And we allow you to get up and running in minutes, but we also let your applications scale on our platform over time. So you never have to build out large DevOps platform engineering teams. You can really just focus on building your application fast and let Render take care of all the infrastructure management for you.
Fantastic. When did you start your company, Render?
Yeah. I started the company in 2018, and we launched publicly at TechCrunch Disrupt Battlefield in 2019. Oh, nice. Which is a competition that we won, and we were lucky enough to be featured as part of all the publicity that you get. And when you win that competition, that was really our public launch.
Oh, fantastic. And you have been pretty successful since then. You have raised money a number of times from well-known investors. Recently, I think it was last year when you raised 50 million, maybe. I don't know.
Most recently, we raised 50 million Series B from Bessemer. And we also raised previous rounds from General Catalyst and Addition.
Fantastic. And then you have been one of the very early employees of Stripe, if I'm correct.
That is correct. Yeah, I was the fifth engineer at Stripe, the eighth employee. This I joined pre-launch when we were just a bunch of people sitting around a table and hoping that people would use our product.
Fantastic. No, that's great background. I would like for you, based on all of this experience, maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, you as a kind of very good engineer getting into these good companies, growing fast, learning about some of these technologies, and then coming out and say, I wanted to start my own company. At that point, what is the problem that you saw? What is the kind of opportunity in the market that you saw that encouraged you to get on this tough job that only crazy people accept, that I wanted to really start a company?
I would agree with you. You have to be a little bit crazy to do what we're doing. But the way it happened was, I was at Stripe very early on, and I left in 2016 when Stripe was well over 400 people, $5 billion in valuation. And I had the opportunity to truly figure out what I wanted to work on, what I wanted to spend time on, ideally for the rest of my working life. And I wanted to find an incredibly hard and ambitious problem to solve. And I wanted it to be exciting to me personally. And I wanted to build products, which is what I was good at, and win on the basis of building a better product versus, winning on the basis of just sales or just, regulation or things like that. And so I explored a lot of different problem domains and, from healthcare, real-time communications, deep learning back in the day. I'm talking about, 2015, 2016, when there was just one type of GPU available on AWS. And I actually built a lot of applications as I was exploring these domains and I was putting them online. That was my way of figuring out if I was excited about any given domain and excited about it to be able to work on it for the rest of my career, ideally. And as I was building these things, I realized that the process of just putting applications online remained incredibly tedious. You had to do the same kind of configuration, thousands and thousands of lines of configuration just to get something up and running on AWS or on top of Kubernetes or what have you. And then you had to work even harder if your application saw any kind of scale. You had to go figure out how to secure it. You had to figure out how to prevent DDoS attacks, how to scale it as you got more traffic and not pay, a lot of money for a lot of unused infrastructure. So there was a lot of work, and there is a lot of work involved in scaling applications on top of, traditional cloud providers like AWS. And I realized that, based on all of the work that I had done building these applications, including a single-click GPU-backed notebook. There's a company I founded called Cressel, which was one of the first companies to give the data scientists a way to spin up a Jupyter notebook backed by a GPU instantly. Mm-hmm. And by doing all of these things, I realized that we now had the technology, the tools, the underlying substrate that could be used to build a much higher level cloud than what existed with the hyperscalers. So that is what I set out to build in 2018. And now Render is approaching almost 2 million developers on the platform. We have well over 2 million live applications, and people are creating over 300,000 applications on the platform every month. So clearly, we've found a very valuable problem to solve, because all of this growth has been entirely organic. We still have to build out a proper sales or marketing function.
That's great. And when you started, there were phases from the starting point until today. That, for example, at what point you were more thinking about, for example, product versus development, meaning the processes and product management, and then at what phase you started thinking about, now the product is fine, now I need to get also on the business side because I'm raising money, I'm talking to investors. And there are different things. And where you are today, how do you feel? Do you see yourself still as kind of the engineering brain behind the company that drives the vision, or equally spending time as a kind of product management kind of brain, or equally spending time as just overall executing the whole strategy and plan of the company? And can you tell us a little bit about that kind of evolution and the steps you have gone through?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in the beginning, everyone was just coding, as it happens, right? And so I was coding almost full time for the first couple of years of the company. After we raised our Series A, Lee Fixell, who's a legendary investor who led our Series A at the time, said, you should hire a VP of finance. And at that point, my job became less coding day to day and thinking more about how we grow the business, how we run an efficient company. And as soon as you start a company, you end up spending so much of your time on hiring. And I have continuously spent over the last several years much more of my time hiring than actual coding. And ultimately, we hired a VP of finance, we hired a VP of people, and I was still the product mind for I'd say until somewhat late 2022, when we hired our VP of product, Megan Gamache, who came from amazing companies like Slack and Figma and Webflow, and even back in the day, Heroku. She was an engineer at Heroku very early on, and when we brought her on, I was able to step back a bit from the product leadership side of things, and have her build out our product org and our design org, and then on the engineering side, we actually had a VP of engineering, Uma Chingunde, who joined when we were about 12 people, and we brought on a new VP of engineering, Mike Greer, recently, who was at Discord before this for about 6 or 7 years. And so my job has become over time much more about hiring great people and hiring, more recently, hiring great executives, and helping them build out their organization. And that's really, I think, as a company grows, that's the job of a CEO. You have to set the culture, you have to set the vision, you have to hire great people, especially executives, and you have to make sure that everyone is moving in lockstep. And I often compare running a company like Render to being in a boat race where all the rowers have specific things to do. They all at this regardless, they still have to row in the same direction at the same speed, and in the right direction. So it all becomes orchestration. And at the same time, I think that given my early focus on product and engineering, I will always be close to that. It'll always be near and dear to my heart. I still get involved in the details every once in a while because I do think that great founder CEOs, from what I've seen, are involved in the details. They can go down to the very low level and they can still operate at a very high level from a strategic and vision standpoint. So I still do both of those things, but certainly more of my time is spent in making sure that we have the right leaders at the company. And that we've set the right vision and the context for everyone at the company so everyone can make those decisions without me getting involved.
Fantastic. And you have been pretty quick to get to those phases in just a matter of 5, 6, 7 years. So that's a lot of changes and phases and hiring and moving up very rapidly in just a matter of 5 years. So that's great. Congratulations. That's great progress. And
Thank you.
I would like to kind of also maybe changing gears a little bit here and talk about a topic that it's probably relative to what Render does, meaning that we look at these platforms, we look at these cloud environments, infrastructure as our new operating system. There was very, very old days that operating system meant to be more Windows or DOS, or depending on how far you go back. And then web came in, and then it became more irrelevant which operating system you are working with, because if you know you are really working with web, your browser was all you care, and on the other side there's a web server running and serving the content or data or whatever it's supposed to, you know, bring to you. So, and then cloud came all of a sudden, and nobody was really even thinking about the operating system the way we used to, and everybody thought that I'm running my application in this particular cloud. And that became your operating system. In your case, also, you are bringing a new option to the market. So everyone may say, Render is my new operating system, right? So, and you are bringing that new operating system for people to run their application on it. And then from end user perspective that consumes the information or the service, they may not even care which operating system you are running on. They just care about what functions they are seeing. But for the application builders tool, you mean something for them, that which operating system I'm working on. In this case, Render is their operating system. Now, how does it play during all these descriptions I provided? I didn't mention, for example, some maybe layers in between, like Kubernetes, right? Yeah. So I didn't mention that. And I'm wondering that with these environments moving forward, gain more maturity, is there a point that someone says, actually, my operating system is Kubernetes? I'm getting all of the services from Kubernetes. I can scale up, scale down. I can do whatever I want. And really, wherever I move my kind of application with that kind of container with Kubernetes as a kind of, you know, containing everything for me, that becomes essentially just where I host my application, including I may just go at on-premise, for example, right? So, So do you see that as a future, that essentially then it's a different concept, that people care only about something like Kubernetes, or you still think that that's for a very minority group of people who can really, really dig into details and write very low-level code, and majority of the market is going to see differently in the future?
Well, yeah, I definitely... First of all, I think the operating system analogy is a very apt one for the kind of things Render is building and for what AWS and other hyperscalers have built. I would not be doing this if I didn't think that most companies do not need the complexity of operating systems like, say, a Kubernetes or even, you know, AWS Elastic Kubernetes service or Google's Kubernetes service. And I say that because my view, and to use an analogy, is that when you build an iOS app, you program to the high level things that Apple provides as part of the operating system. And you don't care about the underlying chip. You don't care about how your application interacts with the processor or how it works with the camera software. You really just, Apple has provided a high level interface to the camera, to the speaker, to the chip. And when you think about the same thing as it relates to the cloud, or as it relates to running applications that other people can access, I think that AWS operates at the chip level, and Kubernetes itself is simply a slightly higher level interface to the underlying hardware, but you still have to understand Kubernetes as a platform engineer, and it's not easy to understand. It's actually becoming more and more complex over time, because there's a massive ecosystem of companies built on top of tiny parts of Kubernetes that are trying to sell you one tiny thing on top of Kubernetes. And I think ultimately what ends up happening, and you see this across all large companies, is that there ends up being this large team of platform engineers who just have to manage Kubernetes. And not just Kubernetes, now they also have to manage the underlying cloud providers, because Kubernetes doesn't give you any software, or you know, it doesn't allow you to by itself host anything. You have still have to use a cloud provider under the hood. So now you're managing both Kubernetes and the complexity of AWS and others. Whereas with something like Render, I would say it's much more like iOS interfaces versus the chip or the camera or the speaker interface, where as long as your application is containerized, for example, or you don't even need to containerize your application, you can just tell Render how you want to build it. And behind the scenes, we will build it and containerize it ourselves, but you don't need to understand even Docker to use Render. But you still get the same functionality out of the box that you would use Kubernetes for example, auto scaling or zero downtime deploys, or the ability to automatically restart your app in the event of a failure, or to say if my CPU average reaches, say, 60% across all my instances, then I should create more instances so that the average stays at around 60% when my load goes up. So stuff like that is why people use Kubernetes, but then they have to go write thousands and thousands of lines of configuration for Kubernetes. Whereas Render focuses on application engineering teams that are building full stack applications. So you don't have to understand even a word of, you don't even have to know what Kubernetes stands for. You really just have to focus on how you build your application. And you have to give us a start command for how you run your application. And then Render has a lot of sensible defaults and best practices out of the box that allow you to build a really performant, a really scalable, and a really secure application without having to do all of that work yourself, and without having to build out large platform engineering teams, which has kind of become the norm because of the low-level interfaces that the clouds and Kubernetes provide to our companies today. So companies on Render can become really big. In fact, we have companies that started out with just the three founders, and then they've now grown to hundreds and hundreds of people, and they're running everything on Render. And they have a tiny, a minuscule team that actually focuses on higher level infrastructure problems like performance and security versus thinking about Kubernetes or thinking about the underlying cloud provider.
Yeah, so the main benefit of people and companies using Render is essentially to save time, spend less time managing the infrastructure, and going to market faster. So the main promise is you can get faster. Job,
yes.
You can get faster, you can get the jobs done sooner, quicker, easier.
Yeah, and you also save a lot of money because you don't have to hire teams of platform engineers who do the low-level configuration work for you, because you don't need to do any low-level configuration. So application engineers become responsible for how their applications run. So, you know, when I write an application for my users to solve any business need, I just want to focus on solving the user's problem. I don't want to think about the underlying configuration for the cloud. And usually very large companies today who have grown up in the AWS era, they solve it by still letting application engineers focus on their application, but then they build out these large internal platforms that are built by platform engineers or DevOps engineers who have spent a lot of years learning Kubernetes or learning AWS. And that's a very expensive team to build. So at Stripe, when I started, you know, we were five engineers and one person was dedicated solely to AWS infrastructure management. Mm-hmm. And then as the company grew, you know, we became hundreds of engineers, 20% or so of the team was still focused on AWS infrastructure management. And so that's a big cost to companies in terms of salaries, in terms of equity, in terms of all kinds of management bandwidth. And Render just replaces all of that with automation, with sensible defaults. And then when you need flexibility, then we focus on giving you the flexibility as needed. And another way to think about this is we focus on progressive disclosure of complexity. So when you get started, you don't have to worry about anything. But then if you need more complex flexibility levers or scaling levers, then Render allows you to make that happen. So as an example, if you need to connect to, say, Bedrock or SageMaker on AWS or BigQuery on GCP, these are not services that Render provides out of the box yet, but we do let you connect to all of these third-party services using private networking. So you don't have to go over the public internet. It's faster, it's more secure. And so we're not trying to build a walled garden. We want you to be able to use Render for your core computing application needs. And then when you work with other very specialized services like SageMaker, Bedrock, BigQuery, then we make it easy for you to integrate with those services. We integrate your Render workloads with those services. And Render gives you out of the box, we give you a managed database, Postgres, which is used, which is, you know, continues to grow in popularity. We give you a fully managed Redis. And then we also allow you to run background workers. We allow you to run scheduled jobs, one-off jobs, obviously web apps, web services. But then we also have private networking built in, which is one of the reasons people use Kubernetes to build out the ability to connect to their services privately. On Render, every service gets automatically a private networking address. So you never have to think about setting it up. And it just makes your communications much more secure, especially for microservice-based architectures.
So as you look into the future, do you think the barrier to entry to start a new kind of cloud services, like AWS, Azure, like Render, the barrier is going to be higher in the future or lower 5 years, 10 years down the road? Is it going to be easier for companies to come in and for one reason or the other say, I'm going to start a new service? Maybe they specialize in one domain. Maybe this is a particularly designed infrastructure for a particular group, or they carve out a particular segment of the market and they tailor all of their requirements and services on that domain. Do you think it's going to be easier or harder? What's your vision on that?
I think even now, if you wanted to build the core, very core functionality of Render, which is allowing someone to host a web app, simple web app, that the barrier to entry to that isn't, I would say, very high to just build, get something up and running. The problem lies in making it scalable and making it reliable and secure. So the problem really comes, the barrier to entry to someone building something like Render is that they would have to do all the work that we've done to make a scalable, secure, reliable platform. And in fact, when you look at Render's peers in terms of competitors that we have people, their customers moving to us because they haven't found the peers to be reliable. And so I think ultimately the barrier to entry is the trust that comes from being in this space for a while and to have customers that have scaled on you, because everyone wants to work with a provider that has shown evidence of scaling, that has shown that it can truly serve large businesses if their business grows over time. And that's the biggest barrier to entry to anyone. And, you know, Render's working very hard to allow companies to continue to scale on us over time and to add new functionality. Because again, you don't want to run just a web service, right? You want other features as your infrastructure grows. Mm-hmm. And so building a managed Postgres service is actually very hard. One that is reliable, again, one that is secure, that allows people just the right level of flexibility. And then the other barrier to entry to these things is just taste and the ability to really focus on what great customer experience looks like. And, you know, I developed a lot of that through all my experience at Stripe. Obviously, Stripe is known for its developer experience. And we focused on that from the very beginning. And so again, you have to make sure that you focus on that, but also you focus on scaling applications and companies and how you can make sure that the platform remains reliable. And that is where we've seen the biggest differentiator between Render and its competitors.
Great point. Great point. So at the end of the day, as we said, it is more about really the robustness of the product that you offer. And that brings that kind of trust in the market for you, that people come in and say, this is very kind of, you know, solid environment, that very stable. And that's at the end of the day, they need something very solid, very secure. And those kind of fundamentals that everyone, any application maker wants to have before, you know, they put that big bet on the table.
Exactly.
For the future of the application.
Exactly. Absolutely. We run business critical services and we take that responsibility very seriously. And so, you know, if you have to build out a whole support organization, you have to build out account management, you know, all of those things, like those are the real barriers to entry. It comes down to how you execute and how you make sure that you prioritize ultimately what users care about, which is, like I said, safety, security, reliability, scalability. And you have to do a lot of the hard work there. You have to spend a lot of hours. You have to wake up in the middle of the night to make sure if an alert goes off. You know, I can't tell you how many times an engineer at Render gets woken up because we discover even a potential issue with someone. We make sure that we address it before it becomes a problem. And that kind of focus on customer service is pervasive throughout our organization. It's a value that I hold near and dear. And our goal is to continue to build a platform that offers the best service to its customers, which is, again, a differentiator we found in terms of the kind of customer service we can offer. You can actually, if you get enterprise support with us, you can page a Render engineer anytime you want. Obviously, if it's an issue, it's a critical issue. And then we'll make sure that we help you in any way we can. Even if the issue is not related to a Render platform issue, even if ultimately we discover that it's something in your application, we will do our best to help you.
Anurag, it has been a great discussion with you. And I would like to ask you as the last question, if you can provide us or suggest some kind of your favorites, the books or maybe the blogs, whatever that you found it impactful from your perspective, you liked it, either personally or professionally, and it was impactful for you.
Yeah, so on the personal front, I'm a big sci-fi reader. but on the professional front, I would like to recommend a couple of books that I've found helpful as I've thought about building a business and a product, and that I've read recently. I mean, there's a ton of books that do this. You know, very early on in my career, I read this book called Founders at Work by Jessica Livingston, which talks about very early stage startups, and I think is very valuable for anyone who's trying to start a business. But more recently, I've read these two books about building a product and company as you scale. One of them is called Build, an unorthodox guide to making things worth making. It's written by Tony Fadell, who created Nest and ultimately sold it to Apple. And the other one is called Amp It Up, which is, I think the subtitle is Leading for Hypergrowth. And it was written by Frank Slootman, who was, until very recently, the CEO at Snowflake. And I really identified with how both Tony and Frank built the companies. And it all starts with a great product, but then there's a lot of work that goes into scaling a business and scaling a company and hiring the right people, raising capital, all of those things. And I think both of these books, Amp It Up as well as Build, can be very helpful for leaders of scaling companies.
Fantastic. Again, thank you very much for participating and joining this discussion. enjoyed it a lot. We will keep up, and we would love to have you back probably in the future to get an update and see your company growing even more.
Thank you so much, Armand. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armand Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.